and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast, pitchless.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined, I was going to say refreshed, but I don't even know if you're refreshed. It's, you know, weddings and honeymoons, they are a lot, but, you know, newly married, newly honeymooned, Nick Pollock. Nick, how are you doing? It's been a while.
Yeah, what is happening? I've done a few podcasts. I just haven't done one with you.
I know. We were taking
And I'm sure everyone is sick and tired of hearing about my wedding and me being married. So Eric Smolsky was there, guys. There is a photo of Eric on the ground in the video confessional booth with Paul Spohr and Eno Saris, and it is Renaissance art.
Yes. I could not fit on the chair next to Paul and Eno, so I just kind of sat on the floor. I think I was leaning on Paul. It was very comfy.
And he looks like a father, stern, looking at his son. Really, truly, truly wonderful time. So happy you could be there. Your wife as well.
It was a great time.
It was a wonderful, wonderful day. And it's January. And we got things to do. I am going through all my starting pitcher rotations. You are about to do your first baseball article of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting times, Eric.
It is very exciting times. I am, now going back to the top 150 starting pitcher rankings that we went over, or 150 for me, that we did in November. And I'm starting to draft that as we get toward like February. I told you I'm starting some of my content looking at post-hype starting pitchers, which will segue into a little bit of what we're discussing today. But yeah, the baseball bandwagon is kicking up. It's going to be super fun. And I'm excited to dive back in. So as I mentioned, my article, these aren't coming out for a while, but, you know, we're starting the research, starting the, you know, gathering process. But I'm going to be looking at post-hype starting pitchers. It segues with what we're doing today, which we are calling finding the super sleeper starting pitchers of 2026. So I wanted to just throw it to you to say, what is a super sleeper? And generally speaking, before we get to the names, how can one find a super sleeper?
How does one find a super sleeper? Well, first and foremost, there is nobody that we're going to mention today that is a lock to be incredible, and we're just smarter than everyone else. And, you know, they're at ADP 500, and we would have them at 200, but everyone's just dumb. That is never going to be the case. So what we're actually doing is saying, okay, this player is available and up for grabs and has a better chance and a realistic path to being something more than the impression is of that player at the moment. And the most popular ways for that to happen, well, outside, of course, of like, hey, he's throwing 96 now instead of 93 that we have no way of knowing at the moment. The most popular one is opportunity, is getting that chance and getting lots of volume. If you look at the play rater every year, even though I hate it, it is so based on volume. And the guys that who have really jumped it in past years have been slept on and done better than expected have been those volume arms, the ones who are able to go 170 innings plus for a team, and not nearly as much of the young, strikeout-focused, inefficient arms. There's a lot more volatility in every start and also in their opportunities, how much is going to be used, do I stash this guy or not? You know, someone who had Bubba Chandler for a lot of last year. Yeah, I don't recommend it. I don't recommend doing that. However, jumping on Noah Cameron early is something that I did as well because of opportunity being very nearby. So as we go through these, we're going to be talking about it in that respect. Sometimes that opportunity is just health. Sometimes it's being that SP6 instead of being the SP8 somewhere else and understanding the organization and how they would utilize them. So we're going to go over the guys that we feel are maybe a tweak away, might have that opportunity, and could ultimately be far better than the ADP is outlining.
Yeah, and I would just also highlight to it, you mentioned, not wanting to stash like the Bubba Chandlers all season. When we are talking about the super sleepers, this range, we don't have a specific range, but this is where you can take those injury risks a little more than I think what you and I were learning. Like, you and I, perhaps in years past, were a little too willing to forgive the injury risks for the guys we thought were, you know, aces, the Shane McClanahans of the world.
Sure, yeah.
And potentially drafting them higher than they should have been drafted based on their actual risk. But when you're talking about guys drafted here, and I will probably mention one or two of them, that's now where, like, yeah, you could take an injury risk here, because if a pitcher is being drafted outside the top 200 ADP, and we're talking more like redraft here, not maybe a draft and hold where you can't make waiver ads during the year, but, like, you know, that's built into the cost and it's no longer as detrimental to you if that injury risk player doesn't hit. So right. Nick and I don't have an ADP cutoff for this. As Nick mentioned, we're looking at guys who we think will have the potential to outproduce ADP or are intriguing risks based on their ADP. I have created a cutoff of 200 for my ADP. And I will just say, I am using the current NFBC ADP as per Kyle Bland's Streamlit app, which
available for PL Pro.
On PL Pro.
It's amazing.
So, and this is as of today, January 13th. So depending on when you're listening to this, the ADP may change. And yes, the ADP factors in tons of drafts, and there haven't been lots of, like, just standard redraft drafts so far. But just use this, take it with a grain of salt, as we just use it to discuss pitchers we think are a little bit undervalued at this exact moment in time. And I'll let you kick it off with the first pitcher.
So I'm using this since January 1st. It gives me just a little bit more of an understanding. And
I'm doing the same thing.
I'm going to cheat a little, just in the sense that if you've been reading my breakdowns of every rotation, you'll see some of these names already. And one of the aspects that we talk about when it comes to being a super sleeper is just being healthy and just being okay. And this is a pitcher who had an extraordinary year in 2024 with 130 plus innings of a sub 2.5 ERA. And then started one game in 2025 and was hurt with a shoulder injury, and we haven't heard since. And looking at this, he's going still well outside of the 450, and he's inside of his team's rotation as a number four, actually, in roster resource right now. And that is Ronaldo Lopez. And am I going to tell you that he's going to be as good as 2024? No. Do I think that he is 100% healthy? I don't know. No idea. It seems like he should be, but it's been, 10 months now? And considering the roster resource has him inside that rotation, sure, let's just see. This is exactly the kind of thing we're talking about, where if people were told that Ronaldo Lopez was healthy and starting, then he would not be going as late. Or saying that he's going to go in the top 200, then no. But yeah, he just had a season that was absurd, and fastball with slider and curve, fastball performed well enough. Slider was getting a ton of swings out of the zone. I mean, swing strike rates off the charts with that in the curveball as well. This could be easy production out of the gate if he is healthy. So, and if he's not healthy, you'll know, you'll be able to move on from before the season starts, and the pick is a cost of free. That is my favorite kind of sleeper pick to take early on, because it's not going to even hurt you in season if the bad happens. So Ronaldo Lopez, my first one of this podcast.
Boom. Love it. I'm going to skip over, but mention two veterans coming off injuries that I like at their current ADP, because it's still early on and we don't know where the ADP will settle. But right now, Shane McClanahan has an ADP of 248, which is obviously way more palatable than drafting him, you know, inside the top 60 or wherever he was going last year. And Joe Musgrove, an ADP of 256. Musgrove, if you remember correctly, had UCL surgery during the playoffs of 2024. So as of right now, is expected to be healthy for spring training. But we haven't seen him on a mound, and so there's lots of risks there. Those are just two guys that I'm currently saying I want to just see how their health goes over the next few months, because at this ADP, I'm intrigued by them. One pitcher we did see get on the mound in 2025, despite the fact that he dealt with injuries, and that was obviously detrimental to his draft stock because his ADP right now is currently pick 260, and it's Bryce Miller. And I have never been like a man, Bryce Miller, he is electric. Like he is legit. But I think we saw enough in that 2024 sample where we're like, okay, Bryce Miller, he has some foundational skills here. And I'm going to go when I talk about like what he does well, I'm going to go primarily off of 2024 because 2025 was a little bit of a mess and injury riddled. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the fastball certainly plays, right? The fastball, he commands it for strikes. He gets swinging strikes on it. It is a really good weapon for him. We know that it's kind of arguably his only weapon or his best weapon. You know, four-seamer, sinker, splitter is kind of what you're getting from him. And so it would be it'd be nice to see him take a step forward. The splitter is a pitch that had far more success, as you would expect, against lefties. It did miss bats against righties, but he uses it primarily against lefties. So whether it's the slider, whether it's the sweeper, you know, something like that against righties would be really nice to see. But, you know, this is a 27-year-old with a good foundational fastball, with two fastball variations, potentially three. He has tinkered with a cutter in the past. I love that type of depth in the fastball variations. We know his home park is going to be really is going to be a big boost to him because it's still, I mean, they've suggested changes in the past with the batter's eye, but we haven't heard anything about it this offseason.
Right.
And so I think that there's a pretty solid floor to Bryce Miller, maybe being like a 4.30 ERA type of arm if he doesn't get any better. Yeah. But if we see an improvement in some sort of swing and miss pitch to righties, whether it's a sweeper or a slider or a curve or any of the number of things he's been tinkering with, you've got a potential like mid threes ERA pitcher with decent strikeout upside who's going pick 260 right now on a team that's going to be competitive and probably will net him a decent amount of wins. And I just think that's a really solid gamble in this area.
Yeah, it's so he's going as SP number 73, Bryce Miller. And it is really interesting to actually have it labeled out by rank, not including relief pitchers.
Yeah. I love that Kyle did
so
that.
Much
it's super helpful
for doing this. And it really is fascinating to see certain pitchers get elevated up. For example, like Tanner Bibee's at 54 right now, but then after that's 55, Ranger Suarez, 56, Cade Horn, 57, Edward Cabrera. And anyone that had Tanner Bibee last year would not be doing that, I think, because it was so tumultuous for the entire year. Then he was a little bit better by the end. Like he had those few great starts, but it doesn't feel as if it's this locked in thing that he's destined to do this upcoming year. And again, NFBC ADP is really strange. It's all these different kinds of drafts, or it's also 15 teamer, et cetera. And it's not quite the 12 teamer one. We don't have the best marks for that at the moment. And I'm going to try to, as much as I can, move away from IL guys' health. I'm going to try and think about it in the way of just like, all right, everyone's assuming he's healthy, but they just don't think he's as good or like the opportunity won't be there. So I think Joey Cantillo is someone you're going to hear a lot. I'm not necessarily going to say he is going to be that super sleeper because I feel like there's going to be enough helium with that. He is the swatch. He is an extension boy. It's the Guardians. It feels like he's going to get the proper amount of helium. It won't be this quiet, sneaky thing. I'm going to take your guy, Johan Oviedo, on the Red Sox because they traded for him to be a starter. As I am petting Cashew over here, I'm hoping that she doesn't just interrupt everything once again. And Oviedo on paper has everything you want. He has the 95, 96 mile per hour four seamer with 99th percentile extension and flat attack angle. Also has more vert than expected on that four seamer. And then he has two breaking balls that he's trusted for strikes and a slider and his curve, and they both get whiffs. The only problem is that he doesn't throw his four-seamer up in the zone properly. And when it's that simple, when it's like really, Oviedo would be legitimate if he just did that.
Yep.
For someone who's, again, a cost of free. Okay, I'm in. And when it comes to the rotation setting up for the Red Sox, I imagine you'd agree that Oviedo has the inside track on Cutter Crawford, on Connolly Early, these other guys, especially after they traded for him as aggressively as they did. I could be wrong in that, and it could be something where you drop before the season starts. That's unfortunate. I am making this selection understanding that he likely is going to make that opening day roster, and I'm just really curious what we get.
Yeah, I also believe that he is going to make the opening day roster. I think that's part of what they were looking for when they traded for him. I think that people, because he's been on Pittsburgh and been hurt, I think that people don't view him as like a pitcher with upside. Mm. I think there's considerable upside here if they were able to help him figure out the command. And I think obviously a pitch change is something that they can help, you know, with a command, a fastball he can throw for strikes, things like that. So I am in on Oviedo again for the price of free. I think a pitch change is also interesting for somebody that I'm in on here. DM'd you, I guess, sent you messages on Twitter about this pitcher. He got a sizable team context upgrade when he was moved to the Houston Astros.
Oh no.
And it's Mike Burrows.
Oh gosh, no. You too. He's not a sleeper anymore.
But he's going right now. He is the 81st starting pitcher off the board.
Yeah.
Pick 317. Mm-hmm. Granted, one pick wild. One spot in front of Grayson Rodriguez, who we'll talk about in another podcast, but Grayson Rodriguez, another one where like this is obviously because of injury, but Grayson Rodriguez going pick 325.
I mean, no one expects him to pitch.
Wild. Yeah. But yeah, look, Mike Burrows is somebody who we talked about this. The changeup really played. The changeup was a really good pitch to lefties. The slider was a pretty solid pitch to righties. He was able to get whiffs with it. The curveball also gets whiffs to righties. He doesn't use it all that much or as much to righties. But there was an issue that his fastball, you know, foundational fastball, the four-seam fastball, is just decidedly average. That's like the best way to put it. And the Astros acquired him and said, we're adding a two-seamer. And I said, cool, because that's basically them saying, we understand that his weakness is the fastball isn't good. And even if we can't make the fastball good, we can give him two fastballs. And so that way we can improve, or we can limit the damage on the fastball by making right-handers have to wonder whether he's throwing a two-seamer or a four-seamer. We can keep guys off the barrel. So maybe that helps the four-seamer get more whiffs, because if the two-seamer has legitimate, like, you know, run in on the hands, the four-seamer might be more impactful up in the zone. But I'm even just looking at it as a baseline of, if the four-seamer just doesn't get hit hard because the two-seamer is there, and the four-seamer had a nearly 55% ICR against righties last year. So if we just get right-handed hitters off the barrel on the four-seamer, then he has the other things I like. Not to make him a stud, I'm not going to say Mike Burrows is a stud, but a guy who, like, in a 15-team league for sure, is just like on your roster all year long. He's going to be on a good team. He's in the rotation. He maybe settles as like the Astros four if these things break right, and he gets a good opportunity for win totals, and he's got, you know, decent but not. I mean, he had a 24% strikeout rate last year, and that's with no changes. So is he a mid to high threes ERA pitcher with a 25% strikeout rate on a good team if that two-seamer actually does work for him? And I just see the path for it, and that's what I like with these picks outside of the top 300 in particular, where I say, okay, I know what they are working on because the team has told me they're working on it. I see if this happens, I think there can be success. And so I take the gamble outside of pick top 300. And then I see if that one thing happens or not. And if it doesn't happen, it's like, cool, we move on from Mike Burrows. The two-seamer never manifested, or it's not actually helping make the four-seamer less hittable. we took the gamble. We knew what we were looking for. It didn't happen. And now we can cut bait and go to somebody else.
Yeah. So the biggest reason I'm not in a Mike Burrows is because he reminds me too much of Jason Alexander. Okay. Sorry, out of context, that sounds hilarious. As if like I'm judging him for being short with glasses or something. But no, Jason Alexander, changeup first righty for the Astros last year. And if there's something that I've certainly held as a rule, is changeup first pitchers without anything else that they can like really put their hat on inside their arsenal, I just don't go for. They're not the kind of, it just isn't the package that I am a fan of and really believe can be a sustainable SP3, SP4 kind of arm. Mike Burrows is a little bit more.
Why do you think he's changeup only?
Well, the changeup is the thing with Mike Burrows.
Sure, to righties at least, he was 31% slider last year.
Right, and I would say that was, he was much better against lefties. I would say the slider isn't very good.
I think it's solid.
I would say that like his strikeouts, for example, that's because he had a 33% put away rate against lefties with a changeup and 28% with the changeup against righties. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that 33% is going to stick against lefties. Right. I know it's a very good changeup, but that is like the elite of the elite for to be that high. And the slider is, I think, just fine. I also would imagine that the four seamer being hittable, 55% ICR right against right-handers last season, that it has batters selling out for that against the changeup, which then illuminates the changeup more. And also, Mike Burrows did throw a sinker last year, 10% of the time to right-handers, and it was bad. I mean, it was a bad pitch.
I think the fact that the Astros said he's going to add a two-seamer to me says they looked at what he was doing and said, none of that. Whatever that was, like, that's not...
Now, I'm not... I understand that completely, and I love that in the context of what we're trying to accomplish here, of saying, like, look, let's not look at someone and just say this is who they are, so... we're going to draft him as such. I guess I would say if like Mike Burrows was going at like pick 450 or something like that, then like I would be there. I think you're going to see Mike Burrows get drafted a ton at the end of 12 teamers even. And that has me a little more weirded out, but you're right of like the changeup is great. If the slider is decent enough against right-handers, and he finds a way to make it so that whatever fastball foundation isn't the worst thing in the world, that will be good enough against right-handers. And then, even when he did throw the changeup 14% of the time, it was a 72% strike rate, 24% swing strike rate against right-handers. And then against lefties, the changeup, even though it was thrown over the plate, it was still just stupid good against lefties. And the four-seamer wasn't as bad. I think it's going to get worse, but that's it only for lefties too, right? So like when it comes to lefties, the slider, the curve, he could not throw for strikes. And the fastball was thrown 66% of the time. The four-seamer wasn't as bad. I don't know if it's going to be exactly that. It was a 24% CSW. And the last part I will mention is that he had two quality starts last year out of 23 games, 19 starts. It was only two games he went six innings. Because that's the Pirates. But also why I brought up Jason Alexander is that the Astros, I think, recognize that there wasn't enough depth in that arsenal to go the full six, third time through the lineup comfortably. And I worry that Mike Burrows might have the same issue.
Though we have, we mentioned this before. We'll see. The Astros claim they're using a six-man rotation. And it's funny is that people say, a six-man rotation, that hurts the starters because they get fewer starts. And I saw an interesting tidbit from Chandler Rome, who covers the Astros for The Athletic. And he also mentioned if a team commits to a six-man rotation, you also have to remember that that means they have one fewer reliever. And so oftentimes that means starters get pushed a little deeper because you can't pull a starter at four innings if you're using six starters, because now you have fewer relievers to cover the extra innings. So The Astros claim they're going to use a six-man rotation. It's January. We don't really know. If they do, there's the, oh man, that means fewer starts. But then there's also, oh, that maybe means fewer 4 2/3 appearances. So I wanted to throw that out there as part of that conversation, because I think that's an interesting wrinkle that admit I hadn't actually thought of when thinking about a six-man rotation.
I hadn't either. I love that. I mean, I love that concept of like, all right, we got to push them more. Also, as a pitcher, you can go a little harder. You can use a little bit more of the tank and not feel as if, you feel fresher essentially every six days. Mike Burrows, I'm curious where it ends up is my point. I've seen that name already. If I see a name already right now, it's Jaren. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So that's why I am like, okay, if his ADP is at 400 and later, I'm like 100%. That seems great. If it's around 300, I'm wondering if he's the best option of that crew, but he's not there yet. So super sleeper he is, Mike Burrows. You heard it here first, Eric Smolski, no one else.
No,
Eric. I have another one that I really want to bring up. But thing is, Eric, we have to take a quick break. Here's another sleeper for you. This is one that I didn't think I would actually be in on and really surprised me. But it's Jordan Wicks.
Okay.
And the reason for this one is look at the Cubs rotation as it is right now. I don't think they're going to make another addition. I think it is right now. They got Edward Cabrera. They re-signed Shota Managa. And that means you have the starting five that is, it's pretty much set at this point. You have the aforementioned Cabrera and Managa. You have also Cade Horton in there. You have Matthew Boyd, and you have Jameson Taillon. There it is.
And
five.
And
then there's Steele eventually coming back, if that's what you're going to say.
Yes, like May, June-ish, I think, is what we're hearing right now.
The thing that I often encourage is don't worry about that, because if the team has all five starters cooking in June, oh my gosh, that is a fortunate team. So then you look at the backup starters. Who are the number six? Well, I don't think Ben Brown should be. I've been saying that for a long time. I think the Cubs are starting to realize that unless he gets something else to throw strikes with, he can't be four-seam or curve. He's better off as kind of a long reliever, as a really in the bullpen. He should be a great shutdown guy. Then you have Colin Ray and you have Javier Assad. Javier Assad somehow has had a sub-4 ERA across his career in every single season, and it still just does not make sense to me. And then there's also, Colin Ray, who overperformed with his four-seamer last year, in my view. And then there's Jordan Wicks. And Jordan Wicks' story is an elite changeup from the left side with a fastball that he overexerted himself with trying to get extra vert on it in 2024. So he pulled a lat doing that. And he's now back, and I see a world where he has that good four-seamer upstairs, a changeup down away from right-handers, and a slider that is able to do well against lefties. And like, there it is. That's a swatch. Jordan Wicks is like made to be a swatch for one of the best team contexts in baseball now that Bregman is there. I mean, Bregman, Swanson, and PCA on the same team in a park that is more beneficial to the pitcher than the hitter based on the wind is pretty bonkers of a situation. So if I wouldn't be surprised if Wicks finds his way into the rotation sooner than expected. Now, out of the gate, he shouldn't be. So throw that out the window, okay? Throw that out the window drafting him. Sorry, I think I said that at the beginning of the podcast that I was going to say that. Okay, it's not. This one is not one of those. But Jordan Wicks should be on your radar at the very least as someone who could step into that role and be that lefty with a changeup that gets you quality innings.
Speaking of lefty with a changeup, I'm sticking in my, this is the last guy I have in like the mid 300s. You've been going far deeper.
Oh yeah. I'm going to like, all right, this is random dude.
Yeah. And I think this is a nice counterbalance.
Absolutely.
I am going with another lefty with a changeup, going currently pick 356, the 89th starting pitcher off the board. And it's Ian Seymour. Ian Seymour, who currently, if you go to Fangraphs, he's currently listed, I guess, as like the SP6 in Tampa Bay's rotation, which implies that Shane McClanahan is in the rotation and Steven Matz is in the rotation and Joe Boyle is in the rotation. And that's a lot of question marks for me. I think we saw the Joe Boyle thing. I would not put Joe Boyle ahead of Ian Seymour. That's just me. It's great that Steven Matz was told he's going to get a chance to start again. He was pretty good as a left-handed reliever. And so I don't necessarily know why you would start Steven Matz over Ian Seymour. Ian Seymour was given a chance to start at the end of the season. He was a starting pitching prospect before he was moved into the bullpen for the Rays. This is a guy with a very good changeup and has a two fastball approach to righties that covers up that, you know, the four seamer to righties is fine, but it's a four seamer and a cutter. And then to lefties, the four seamer is much better to lefties. He's four seamer sweeper to lefties, which is enough in my book, against lefties from a left-handed pitcher. You know, we're moving out of George Steinbrenner Field for the Tampa Bay pitchers, which is a boon for them as well. And so I think Ian Seymour is somebody who starts the year in the Tampa Bay rotation. And I like what he can bring going, you know, near pick 400.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that one completely. That's a perfect case of, right, if there's any sort of hole at the beginning of the year, like Ian Seymour would just go and grab that, and pitching in Tropicana should also be better than George Steinbrenner Field. So I love that pick, Eric, as also just kind of like out of the gate, like, oh, quiet and could just easily get you innings at a quality rate. So that's a fun one. I am going to go with someone I actually thought would be a super sleeper this time last year and kind of assumed, oh, you know what? He's not going to get it. There's going to be too many guys in his way. But as of right now, he is locked in as the number five starter for the Texas Rangers. And that is another lefty with a changeup, Mr. Jacob Latz.
Mm.
And Jacob Latz has a 94-mile-per-hour four-seamer with 18 inches of vert and is not a steep attack angle of 1.1 height-adjusted VA. I'll take that all day. Give me that vert without the steepness of it. I'm a huge fan of that from the left side throwing 94. And that changeup, 22% swing strike rate last year. Oh, that's some fun stuff. That's a 10-mile-per-hour difference from the four-seamer. He also has a decent slider, and that's really all you need. And I'm curious to see if he did take another step forward from this. Jacob Latz had some really nice moments last year for the Rangers, was mostly in relief, but he did get an opportunity to quote-unquote start. I mean, he did a few times in the last game of the season was 5.1 innings of 6 Ks and 200 runs against the Guardians in Cleveland. I love that park. Arlington has proven to be a very good pitcher's park as well. Jacob Latz, if the Rangers don't make another signing, even they make one, he would be the next one to fill it. Not to mention that, who do they have right now? It's Leiter and Rocker, who are filling up the end of that too with Eovaldi and DeGrom. So it's not the most stable rotation either. And he would be the only lefty in that rotation, Jacob Latz, which might be another reason why the Rangers go with him. So I'm pretty excited about it. I feel like Jacob Latz has strikeout ability with that changeup, has a better four-seamer than we see a lot of these swatches, and does have a slider that should be better than it has been thus far. And generally, I think that sliders are the easiest ones for these lefties to figure out something worthwhile. So I'm excited about this one. I think Jacob Latz is someone that is getting overlooked.
I like that call. I'm just going to, like, some guys I'm not going to talk about, but I just want to mention going outside of the top 400 at this point. I will not give up on Zebby Matthews. Starting pitcher 94 going 407. I still like Zebby. I want to see what happens in spring training. Seth Lugo going pick 434 right now. We've talked about Seth Lugo.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I don't want to repeat that one, but that's a great just call out right now. Absolutely.
That's from January 1st on. So I really like Seth Lugo. I'll amend a little bit a name we talked about earlier. We talked about Spencer Arrighetti. He's going pick 490. When we talked about it the last time, I had forgotten, because the Astros had downplayed it, and we shouldn't listen when the Astros downplay injuries, but that he had a UCL injury at the end of the year, and then we found out that he was getting a second opinion on it in the offseason, and so that is concerning. But going pick 490, Arrighetti is somebody that I would watch in spring training to see if he actually comes back looking healthy. A name I am going to focus – and then also Landon Rupp going 551 right now. I believe that as of everything that I have seen, he is expected to be healthy coming into the spring. He was not dealing with an arm injury at the end of the year. He still has a spot in the rotation. So I would be surprised if that doesn't, go up, quickly as we approach. And then the guy I'm going to talk about, I understand that this may be wish casting, starting pitcher 149, going pick 634. It's Kyle Harrison. The reason I want to talk about Kyle Harrison is twofold. One, as of right now, there's a battle for the fifth spot in the Red Sox rotation. We'll see, maybe even the fourth spot. We'll see, with Oviedo if they make another acquisition. I still think they might make another acquisition. I think there is a belief that Connelly Early, Peyton Tolley, they'll get the shot. I think that, I talked about Patrick Sandoval before. I think that right now the Devers trade has been a public relations disaster for the Red Sox, especially considering they did not re-sign Bregman, who ostensibly was taking Devers' spot, and they had cleared money to bring him back in and whatever. I think they will want to show that they got something from that trade. And I think that that kind of stuff can't be dismissed when you're thinking of who wins a spot in the opening day rotation or lineup, assuming things are close to being equal, not saying that somebody is given that spot. But why I wanted to bring that up is because I think there's a lot of, hey, Kyle Harrison made his Red Sox debut after they were working on his pitch mix, and he didn't look that much different than we saw previous. But I think we also have to understand that a pitcher making changes to their arsenal in the middle of the season and that clicking in the middle of the season and them looking like a drastically different pitcher in the middle of the season from May to August, that's an incredibly difficult thing to do. What we do know is that the Red Sox are working with him on the changes that we hoped somebody would work with him on back when he was with the Giants, in particular, adding in the cutter. There were some tweaks to the curveball that were supposed to be happening. You pointed out when in his final few starts that the cutter didn't look great, but also the changeup looked worse. And we've talked many times about how when you focus on a new pitch and a new grip, old pitches can sometimes become less locked in for you.
Yeah, they get neglected.
They get neglected, exactly. And so I'm looking at this as a 24-year-old who has always had considerable upside. He's only 24. Who's always had considerable upside if he hits on this, if he hits on that, is now going to have a whole offseason to continue to work on the changes that they were trying to make in the middle of the season, but without the stress of this happening in the middle of the season. We also have enough data, and I've done enough new pitch analysis to know that the second year of a pitcher throwing a new pitch is often sees a lot of improvement because they have far more experience with it. They can now turn their attention back to some of their other pitches because they're not hyper fixated on that one new pitch. So technically speaking, this would be Harrison's second year with a cutter, theoretically. And so I'm now just saying, at pick 634, I'm not willing to say, hey, he tried the cutter, it didn't work, it's just never going to happen for Kyle Harrison, because I just think it's unrealistic to expect a pitcher to make those changes in the middle of the year. I think he's on a team that wants him to start. I think he's on a team that has a starting spot that he could win. I think he has a path forward that is the path forward we have wanted from him for him for the past few years. And he has age and raw foundational upside on his side that in this range, I like taking that gamble because, again, as you always talk about with pitchers that are this late, like you move on real quick because what you are investing in it is so little that even if I'm doing a draft in the spring, I could do this draft and watch three of his spring starts and say, yeah, actually a whole offseason and that cutter is still not good. And it's like, okay, that's it. We gave it a shot and it's over. But I think there's a path here for Kyle Harris.
So despite that, I have no faith in Kyle Harrison's command getting better. I think that's a great call because maybe it does. And all of a sudden Kyle Harrison works because the flat four seamer was up to 94 and change earlier on in the season too. And hopefully that comes back as well. And great point about second season with the cutter, with that pitch. So I hope you're right for your sake.
I hope so too.
As a Boston fan, Eric.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And I have, guys, I'm so sad to say it. I have dramatically dropped Connelly early in my rankings. Because I do not believe he will be in that opening day rotation. And Eric, you win. You win, Eric.
I don't want
you to win. All right. No, it's more so that it's more so that I figured Cutter Crawford would get a chance first.
Potentially. Yeah. Crawford does have a history as a reliever as well. So mm-hmm. I think there is the possibility that they say, you know, hey, you can be our multi-inning guy.
It's more that like Connelly is like their seven at the moment as opposed to their 6/5. Because, mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. As much as I hate it, Patrick Sandoval, my gosh, but it's found money. So fine. It'll have a reason to then limit Connelly a little bit and protect his innings for the year. And oh, I hate it. It won't be totally needs to figure out the cutter or something else outside the four seamer. But yeah, I've lowered Connelly early.
One more each
in my rankings. Yes, but we got to take. We got to take a break, Eric. We do.
Let's take a short little break.
Yeah. Man, there are so many I could do, Eric.
Yes.
There are so many. I could even go back to our boy Lucas Giolito if I wanted to.
Yeah.
Because he'll get signed somewhere.
He will.
And guess what? And we're talking about volume. He will go every 5 days for whatever team signs him. He'll go 90 plus pitches. And as you saw, yes, there were some disasters from Lucas Giolito. But there are also some moments of bliss. And don't forget that he did not have a regular offseason last year. He was still recovering from his UCL brace, internal brace surgery. So he, yeah, could benefit from that. That sounds pretty cool to me. I am very curious to see what the Mets are going to be doing too. Brandon Sproat that I wasn't in on, I'm now kind of more intrigued on because he might have a flat enough four-seamer with a good curveball for lefties while the sinker approach with the sweeper is really nice. Maybe. I just have him above Tong and Scott at this point because Scott shouldn't be ready to go. But, all right, if I really need to pick just one more, I'm going to do one that everyone's going to laugh at. This is the most ridiculous call. Okay? And look, I don't expect to be right. I don't. But I need to put into your brains that it's not so far-fetched, okay? This player does not pitch for a team. He does not. He had a contract for a year, had two straight years of sub-4 ERAs, was known as a workhorse, won a World Series. And then he was an atrocity, had to get Tommy John after that. And we haven't seen him since. And that man is Jordan Montgomery. Hmm. And I'm going to tell you right now, that sounds ridiculous. But he pitched poorly when he got Tommy John the same season. And I wouldn't be shocked in my head if Jordan Montgomery was trying to pitch through injury to justify him getting to the end of that 1-year deal. So that he can get the contract he wanted initially. And now here he is. He's going to take a one-year deal somewhere, I'm sure, to prove that he's still okay. He's going to pitch his heart out.
He's going to pitch his little heart out.
He's going to do it. And whatever team signs him will give him every opportunity to do it. And it's not crazy to say that this actually could be productive in your 15-teamers. I mean, I want to say it again. Two straight years under 4 year rate easily. It was like, oh my gosh, Jordan Montgomery, he's great. He's great. Whatever. Signs $25 million with the Diamondbacks for 1 year. Is terrible. Gets Tommy John. Haven't heard from him since. Now he's coming back from Tommy John, guys. That's it.
I like it.
Super sleeper. Not a single peep. It's a joke at this point. But it shouldn't be.
I'll throw out a couple names and then I'll focus on one guy. I am curious to see. I think Christian Scott in New York is a forgotten pitcher. He's going 600 right now. Was really good in 2024 and in the minors and looked pretty good in 2024 in the majors. We don't know where he stacks up with the other Mets pitching prospects. We don't know how many of those pitching prospects will still be with the Mets at the start of the season. But I'm keeping an eye on him at this point because, you know, it's not like he's that old. He's not washed. You know, there's still something there if he gets an opportunity. And so that's something that I'm keeping an eye on. I am keeping an eye on, or a name to monitor here as well. Listen, I know it's injuries. I know it's crazy. Alek Manoah is going pick
7. He's the SP 5.
He currently has a spot in the Angels rotation, and we're not that far away from Alek Manoah being a Cy Young contender.
Oh,
I don't think we're getting Alek Manoah a Cy Young contender, but at pick 700, could you get Alek Manoah a pretty solid MLB starter? Yeah, I think that's entirely possible. I do think a lot of his struggles were injury related, and so maybe maybe it's no longer, you know, injury related, and so that's just a name that I'm watching there. I'm also interested to see what happens with Griffin Canning, who's currently going pick 730. He had the Achilles injury, but he is apparently healthy and throwing for teams. I mean, he was, you know, the White Sox were thinking of signing him. The Mets made like a pitch mix change or an approach change that really worked for him. And so if that carries over for another team, you know, Canning had a 3.77 ERA and a 22 or 21.5% strikeout rate in 76 innings. Like at pick 700 and what did I say? 30. Like, yeah, who knows? But the guy I want to focus on, and I don't even know. I want to just preface this. Like, I don't even know if I love this pitcher.
Oh yeah, right. That's the fun of this. We don't really,
but
we can see how it could work.
But I want to pick. Starting pitcher 154, pick 663 is Robert Gasser.
Ha!
Everybody assumes
that Patrick.
Everybody assumes that, let's say the SP5 is Chad Patrick from Milwaukee. Everybody assumes that Logan Henderson is the SP6. So if they do trade Freddie Peralta, Logan Henderson is in the rotation, etc. I would just like to point out that the Brewers have no left-handed starters in that rotation. That Robert Gasser is 3 years older than Logan Henderson. That Robert Gasser was one of their top prospects prior to getting hurt in 2024, mind you. Rehabbed all of 2025. Pitched 5 MLB innings in 2025. And he pitched, I'm looking up the exact number of minor league innings, pitched 38 minor league innings last year. So pitched over 40 innings last year coming back from injury. So that's kind of like what we've talked about. We've seen him on the mound and healthy again. This is a guy who doesn't have overpowering stuff, even though in 2022 and 2023, he like dominated the minor leagues, like led minor league baseball in strikeouts. It's because he has he's a sinker four seamer. But the sinker has boatloads of arm side run. And then he throws this sweeper and they kind of have like identical but mirror opposite movement patterns. So the sweeper actually ate up right-handed batters when he pitched in the big leagues in 2024 or in the minors too in 2024, because it's a, even though you're like, you can't throw sweepers to opposite-handed hitters, like when you're pairing that with a sinker that kind of moves the exact same way in an opposite direction, it is, it can be baffling, befuddling, confusing.
Is what you should think of, guys.
And I think it's a six pitch mix. The last time I checked, nothing stands out. Changeup, cutter, four seamer. Nothing is like, man, this pitch is electric, except the sweeper, which is pretty good. But I just think, like, if a spot in that rotation is open, getting a lefty who I think he also walked one batter, in his major league sample size in 2024. And I know that, you know, he's walked more in the minors, but I think he is a plus command pitcher. I think the Brewers do well with plus command pitchers that have deep pitch mixes, and he's going to be a different look from the other guys in their rotation. And if it's a bat, let's say Freddie Peralta moves, even if Freddie Peralta doesn't move, if it's a battle between Chad Patrick and Gasser and Logan Henderson, it would not surprise me if Gasser won that spot to be the lone lefty in that rotation. Also, Chad Patrick has two minor league options. It's not like Chad Patrick has to be in the rotation. It's not like Chad Patrick was this world-beating starter before coming over to the Brewers in 2025. Like, you could very well see Chad Patrick get lit up in spring training and lose a rotation spot. Like, that is firmly within the realm of possibility. So Robert Gasser is just a name that I would not forget.
There you go. You heard it here first. Last ones, Tyler Mahle and Adrian Hauser in San Francisco land, especially if they get Nico Horner in that trade. Adrian Hauser, look, last year increased his velocity and extension, and it was like 94 to 95 with 7 feet of extension, and he was able to just get outs for the White Sox, get outs for the Rays. And Tyler Mahle is not the greatest thing ever, but also did a good job of pitch separation last year with his four-seamer and his splitter and his slider. And it doesn't need to be the greatest thing, but they will get six innings in San Francisco with a great defense and good home park. So those are the other volume arms that I would consider who are honestly safer than a lot of the other ones that we talked about just because they have the rotation spot as of right now, both of them. So those are the last ones I'll mention. Fun one there with Gasser. I'm curious what we're going to get from him. He could be a swatch. He could be a swatch.
His changeup seemed decidedly average, at least in the big league sample. So we'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. But I think that's it, Eric.
That is it. Nice to get back on the horse here. Yes. We are full go now, ladies and gentlemen. We are working.
Poor Eric.
At minimum of one episode a week, sometimes two episodes a week from now until we kick the season off. And so we are here with you. If you have forgotten about us, make sure you're constantly checking back in. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, X, Blue Sky, all that kind of stuff. The podcasts are coming back. The written content is coming back. It is baseball season, even though I love my Buffalo Bills and they are still, as of now, right in this thing. And, you know, I still love the Knicks and they're intriguing and frustrating in their own right. And so we got other sports going on, but we're back in this baseball thing.
Eric, how dare you bring football into this? You never say the F word. Okay. I want to give shout out to Eric, who is going to be going through the ringer with the Olympics. He's going to be covering the Olympics at NBC. So
yeah, it's a pretty cool opportunity to be in the control room live for some of the Olympics coverage, doing like some statistician, you know, like storyline stuff for freestyle skiing. So if you're watching aerials and moguls and stuff, which is going to be on at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning East Coast time, a lot of the stats and factoids that pop up on the screen are going to be courtesy of yours truly. And so Nick and I are still going to be trying to put out content in that time based around that schedule. And I'm still going to be putting out baseball content in that time based around that schedule. So it's going to be an interesting 3 weeks here in February.
It might be a lot of me rambling, and that's okay for Eric. He's just like, Nick, just talk about this guy. Talk about him.
With this guy, I'm going to take a little cat nap. You talk
about, and you're going to wear one of those glasses that have the eyes on it.
Can do that. You know? Yeah, we can do that.
It's going to be wonderful. But no, huge props to Eric for taking that on, and we're happy for you. And we will know who to send our typos to reports. That's straight to Eric, everyone. But it's great to be back and doing this. We got a new fresh year. We have PitchCon around the corner in about 2 weeks, everyone. I know we haven't done the big full splash of it yet, but yeah, that's happening on the 29th of January as we aim to raise money, $10,000 for ALS One, a fantastic organization combating ALS. And remember that everything we raise, 100%, is going straight to the cause. We've raised nearly, I think, $50,000 since the start of it in 2020. So we're really excited about that. And of course, we have 20 million other things to share with you, but we will do that soon. But Eric, that's going to do it for this episode, isn't it?
That is going to do it. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go keep doing some more research on freestyle skiing.